Good afternoon and welcome to stream 5 of the CCX seminars. We are the new normal stream, so I hope you're in the right place this afternoon. This first seminar is looking at digital church. And before we begin, a few practicalities for you. First of all, we are recording this session, but none of your questions or chat will be recorded. The only people visible are going to be me and the speakers and panelists, so you don't need to worry about appearing on the recording yourself. If you do want to ask a question, then please do use the Q&A function, not the chat function. You can use the chat to share your thoughts and ideas, but if you want to ask a question, and we'd love to hear from you, then please do use the Q&A. If we mention your question, we'll just use your first name so that we don't share too much of your information. You can also share on social media as well using the hashtag MultiplyX2021 or hashtag CCX. My name is Hannah Patton, and this afternoon we've got two panelists joining us. We've got Ayo Olunloyo, Multimedia Production Manager, ordained pastor and senior manager at Jesus House London. He's also the Technical Production Manager at Festival of Life UK. Welcome, Ayo. We also have Thando Zulu, who is the Discipleship Pastor at Saint Church, which is a church of multiple parishes in East London. I used to live in that parish, so I'm particularly fond of that, the place where you are, Thando. But first, we're going to hear from Reverend Dr. Peter Phillips, who is a Research Fellow and Director at the Centre for Digital Theology, Department of Theology and Religion at Durham University. And he's also Head of Theology at Premier Christian Media. So Pete, over to you.
Hi everybody, nice to see you. I'm going to share my screen and hopefully this works well. So share and trying to do some whiz bang stuff. There we are. It'll come up in a minute. So I've got 15 minutes just to share with you something about digitality and hybrid church and digital theology and so on. So these are the kind of key things that I want to talk about, is about discipleship and hybridity. But let me just take you a little bit, first of all, into where we've been. And this diagram is going to kind of gradually get bigger as the 15 minutes progress as you go through different slides. One of the key things that we found over the lockdown and beyond is that hybridity or hybrid models of church include more people, both on-site and online. And that's the kind of language we want to use rather than in person and in digital, because we're always in person. I'm as much a person now here, sat in my little office in Durham, as I am when I'm in a church building. So on-site and online is a really good way of not saying we're depersoned when we're online. So just remember that. The church has done absolutely fantastically by going online. And there's a load of research already out there now. And if you scan this little QR code up here, then you can get all the research materials I've used, all the research reports that are listed here, and Heidi Campbell's 5 ebooks and everything are available. Just scan that with your smartphone and that'll be fine. That research has all been kind of pointing to this idea that we've had lots of new people popping into the church, lots of people coming in and looking at what we're doing, but also lots of people who are already in the church have been coming into online church as well. Gladys Ganiel from Queen's University Belfast has been doing some great work in this, of how the Catholic Church pioneered this. Of course, we all also think that it's just us that's been pioneering this. We're the innovators and what have you. But of course, it's the disabled community, those who are housebound or those who are long-term ill, who are actually the big pioneers of online church, the people we've left out of our buildings or not kind of prepared our buildings properly. And so big, big respect to the disabled community who are the pioneers. We're kind of colonizing their territory. So you've got to be very, very careful about that and what we do. Respect to Katie Tupling, who is the diocesan advisor for the Diocese of Oxford, who brought up that kind of on-site and online issue there and kind of proposed that rather than digital and virtual as a possibility. Joe Pillay from South Africa kind of talks about these four shifts during online during the pandemic: a worship shift, where we've had lots more digital experimentation, which has been seeker-friendly, but a globalized flavor as well. A missional shift, asking what God's up to. We're going to talk about that in a minute. An open, accessible church, which gives open access to God. But also a justice shift, a focus more on how we can serve the needs of the poor, those who are marginalized, those who are oppressed by our community. And we've seen the big uptake in that as the government and in, you know, atheist society, what have you, kind of look more to the church for the future and say actually we're an important part of British society, the world's community and so on. But there have also been theological shifts as we've reappraised what we mean by the Missio Dei, what God's up to in this, and what we mean about missional or network community as well. What is hybrid church? Well, a quick definition here. Hybrid church is a fresh expression of church within digital culture. But it's not just about digital, it's about on-site and online, but also using lots of other technologies that we'll come to later on. It's giving people the choice of where they can, to be where they can be, to be where they feel safe, to be where they feel they experience God, to be the body of Christ. And one of the key phrases people have used as they've come to look at online church during the lockdown has been that we've provided a sofa behind the back pew, a safe place where people can look in at our institution and say, actually, they're not too bad. You know, they're not like kind of, you know, Martians or something, you know, they don't wear silly clothes. They just look like us. They look like normal people. And the more people we put up front at our kind of live streaming or our Zoom meetings or what have you to take part, the better, so that they see the kind of diversity of our community. The big things about on-site and online, there's been this idea of God in the wild. And we did some research right at the beginning of lockdown, and kind of online church was a big success, lots of people searching, but the Google line was pretty flat when we added three other metrics: prayer, Jesus, and God. God was right at the very top of Google Trends, as lots of people were searching him. I'm going to go back to some research at the end of this talk about how God is the thing, is the person that people are trying to connect with when they come to our church. They're not necessarily coming for that, you know, slick sermon or the great live tube feed or the lack of any technological problems and what have you. They wanted to connect them with God. They want people want to find God in that place and some way to connect with him. John Drain has done loads of work during the lockdown for the Scottish Government because he offered to do spiritual care for people, not to provide services, not to provide church, just to provide spiritual care. He was taken up for this within 30 minutes of putting that on the website. And since then, he's talked to 2,000 people who are not connected with church, who want to know, how do I pray? If I get prayer wrong, will God smite me? How do I connect with God? Who is this God? What's the best way to approach the divine or what it means? This is absolutely fantastic. People excited about connecting with God. And that's through a both on-site and online church as we see it at the moment. Here's some research that we did with Savanta Comrades back at Durham University. And you can see here that we think that about 24 to 28% of the adult population regularly engage in online worship. Okay. That's huge. A quarter of the population of the UK attending worship. And you can see that that's skewed especially to the younger age groups here, the 18 to 24s and 25 to 35, who see digital as part and parcel of everything. So really interesting kind of what we're beginning to see, this kind of shift towards online engagement of younger people in trying to find God and find out what God's up to. But of course, as we went on through the pandemic, it wasn't all this kind of burst of life at the beginning over there. It was then kind of gradually becoming trauma and exhaustion was part and parcel of it as we kind of saw lockdowns opening and so on, the slight return to church and so on. And we've got to realize that tech has its own problems. So Marshall McLuhan kind of once said, the medium is the message, and made the point that whatever tech we use, it changes the message that we're trying to give across. And secondly, that we can entertain ourselves to death. That Neil Postman, one of McLuhan and Walter Ong's students, what have you. But this sense that we've got to be very, very careful about what we do with our tech. If you put stuff on YouTube, it's really easy to people for people to feel they're watching entertainment. Yeah, they're just watching something that they like and they can just relax in and, you know, chill over. Is that what you want for church? Are you presenting church as theatre too much? Because church is also about community, isn't it? It's about Zoom meetings where we connect with one another and share with one another and see people's faces. Actually, we see more people's faces on Zoom church than we do in on-site church, because usually you're sat in a pew looking at the back of somebody else's head. Yeah, or even in a nice comfy chair, looking at the back of somebody's head. But at Zoom church, we see everybody. We can see when people are responding and singing and so on. So be careful of the technology that you're going to be using, and maximize community in all of this. Maximize seeing lots of different faces. The other thing that we need to maximize is discipleship. And here's a brief survey from Gladys Ganiel. Look at the first two columns, the mini columns. The Catholics went for, in Ireland, went for several per day posts or once a day posts, whereas the Protestants, grey, red and yellow in the central big columns, they tended to go for replacing Sunday. OK, the Catholics are actually right, because what's happened over the lockdown is that it's discipleship which has grown. Compline's, morning prayer, evening prayer, discipleship groups, prayer meetings, prayer courses, Alpha, all of this, loads of people attending opportunities to learn more about the Christian faith and become a disciple and to learn more and more about how we engage with the Christian faith. And perhaps we all need to kind of make that shift over and say that this is about 24/7 discipleship rather than just replacing Sunday mornings. It may be that Sunday mornings go back more into on-site stuff, or perhaps even the hybrid model. We have on-site and online in the same place. And here's my kind of full diagram, because the exciting thing about this diagram is people are seeking God. All the way through, we've had this idea about God in the wild, that Missio Dei states that God is out there on the mission field, part and parcel of doing mission himself. And the point of our mission is to join him in that mission field, to say that we want to accompany God and explore what's happening with God, explore the creativity of what he's doing. And so now, here at this far side, as we now come to hybrid church and what's going to happen after July the 19th and all that lot, we'll be able to sing in church again. Please don't close down access to your church, access to those who are disabled, who can come and join you online, access to those who are just sat on the sofa at the back of the church, you know, actually in their homes, who want to pop in and see how you encounter God, see your examples of encountering him, and then to come match that themselves. Don't close down the church just to those 4 million people that we had attending back in the day. Let's make church open to the 16 million that may well be wanting to come and share with us in church. But also don't make it just digital. Make it lots of technologies. You know, I know a church in the Pennines where they went to phone technology, you know, landlines, and they were meeting before the pandemic with three people in their chapel, just three, okay? They now have 12 people meeting from that village, okay? All chatting on a Sunday morning on their phone lines and singing together and everything. They don't want to go back to on-site church because it would cause a huge decline. So they want to carry on with phone church and keep that going as well. Can we put bulletin boards outside our churches to attract people in? Can we take out paper notices for people? What's the technology that you can use in your community to connect with people best? I'm going to draw this to an end now, but just that research from Pew Research Center in America. Look at this, 61% come to church to be closer to God. Okay, they don't come for your sermons. They don't come for your worship. They want to come because they think they'll be closer to God in your expression of church. Really, really important to kind of pick that up, because in a way, what we're doing is trying to act as a kind of dating service for God. Yeah, trying to get people connected with God so they can understand what he's all about. So here I am. Look at Dave Adamson's discipleship thing, because he reckons that these columns in green are the most important thing. In-person small groups, that's where we should be going, that's what we should be doing, and everything else is just an introduction to disciple people in the digital age. Thanks very much for listening. I'm sorry to go so fast, so much to do, but you'll be able to see this one back, and just slow me down to half speed if you watch it again. Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Pete. I'd love to invite our panelists to share with us a little bit of their own experience, and then we're going to open up a conversation off the back of some of the things that you've mentioned. And thank you so much, Pete, for giving us so many further resources that we can read up about and learn from other people's experience over the past 18 months particularly. So Tando, I'm going to hand over to you. Do you want to share with us a little bit of your own learning and experience?
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much, Pete, for that talk as well. Really enjoyed it. So I think for me, I found it really interesting observing almost the different stages that we've gone through in churches throughout the pandemic. So if we think back to the beginning of the pandemic where everything had to shut down and there wasn't the option for what we're now able to talk about in terms of hybrid, everything had to shift. It was either online or nothing. So it was really about survival. And it was like, how are we going to continue worshiping in a context where the limitations and constraints have increased like almost exponentially overnight? So there was this idea that everything all of a sudden went online. And before that, as we've heard, it's like there were communities that were meeting online in various ways, whether that was, as has been referenced, the disabled community, or a lot of churches around the world had this hybrid model where it was a bit more of an afterthought or a shop window, as it were, into seeing what the church could be like ahead of attending. But it shifted from something that you just, from being the shop window to almost the dining room table, where the way online was we're including people in a new way due to the constraints of the pandemic. So that was like the first moment where some people were pre-recording their services, and really it was about how do we still allow people to engage with worship. But the models we were using, like I'm saying, pre-recording sermons and worship experiences, would very much lean to people consuming and being spectators of our services. And then maybe iteration two of the pandemic, where it's getting to summertime, kind of move to this more, the places are able to be open, people are able to be in person. But we realized in our context anyway, that for some people, and I think one of the questions have been in the chat already, some people were joining church for the first time and they had barriers in terms of physical barriers, where it wasn't to do with the pandemic, but maybe just location and maybe even time zone, where they could only join online. So we now have this thing where it's like, well, to include these people who are now part of our community, it would feel almost a disservice not to continue our online offering. So that was a first iteration of our hybrid model, but that was quite pre-recorded online, and then in-person was more interactive. But then we're like, how do we build community and engage with people in an online space? And one of the things, if I just touch on the mediums of use, we thought about, okay, what do people already use? So for work, all of us around the world got used to this phenomenon called Zoom. We're using right now even, it's like, okay, great. This is one of the ways that we can go to where the people are. And I think one of the interesting things, especially about the emerging generations, is that Gen Z in particular have been described as digital natives. So if we think back to Acts chapter 1 and this like commissioning of the church in its inception, talks about starting local, like Jerusalem, Judea, and like to the ends of the earth. And maybe one of the thoughts that could be in people's minds is this idea that could the ends of the earth now be include this digital native generation that is described, that is one of the ways that Gen Z are described in. So then we thought to ourselves, okay, some people are on Zoom often, but a lot of people are on YouTube as well. And interestingly, a lot of these platforms have understood that to really engage people, you have to have a community element. So even YouTube, which rightly said is an entertainment platform, has ways for people to dialogue and engage and build community built into it intentionally. So how can we as the church go to where people already are, where they're already spending a lot of their time, and bring church to people? This, I guess, that continuation of the thought thread of God in the wild. How do we take this message of the kingdom of God, the places where people already are, but they may not have that. They may be coming to it in the way that many people do, where church is on Sunday and then I have the rest of my life. How do we make those barriers less obvious and like church be able to spill into to things that people are already engaging in Monday through Friday, so it feels seamless rather than God being in the box? No, now God's in the wild and he's part of my whole life. And then now we have this time where I think it's going to be very interesting, because we're moving from a stage where we've had to have church online survive. And I think the big question I would have is, how do we move from church online or hybrid models being a tool for survival and what we do to survive, but being something that in which people thrive? So now the question isn't about church survival, but it's about, okay, what's the healthiest version of engaging people in corporate worship? And now when we have the option for online, how do we incorporate that in a way that causes people to thrive? And I think there's a few questions around that in terms of the research about whether it's mental health issues or addiction issues, and what happens with people when that dopamine hit that you get from notifications, comments, etc. How is what we're doing in church contributing to people and human thriving, even in a context where we're no longer online to survive? What does flourishing of our congregants and our people look like in a digital age would be the next thing that I think we'll need to grapple with now that there's a real option to do online and on-site, would be just some of my reflections and thoughts that I'd like to share.
Brilliant. Tando, thank you so much. You brought a lot of questions at the end there. And I think that's a really great model for us, because we're right in the middle of a massive learning experience here and trying to map our theology onto our circumstances and learn. And as Pete has already alluded to, what is the Lord doing? What's God doing in the middle of all of this? And how can we follow in that path? Aya, I'm going to hand over to you. Do you want to share some of your thoughts?
Thanks, Hannah. And thanks, Pete and Dando. Really great submissions there. Very exciting. You can hear me?
Yep.
Okay, brilliant. So, you know, these guys have set quite a great background there. But, you know, I'd like to quite start from the why. And when we think about the Great Commission in Matthew 28, which is, you know, Christ's charge to all of us to go out and make disciples of all nations. And that begins to sort of set for me, the context and the tone for everything that we're doing. So this question of online church, physical church, and so on, it's very important to just remember that technology is the means to an end, and the end is that gospel. And I think that's very, very crucial. So that, you know, if we keep that at the back of our minds constantly, then we're in a position where we always go back to the why. And when there's any chance of misalignment, we are, you know, very quickly realigned. And I think that's very important. And I think, you know, the technology has its role, has its place, but it must never overshadow, you know, the gospel, which is the real end. And I think that's one of the key things that is a focus for me. So in my experience, you know, at Jesus House, you know, we for a while, we're quite a reasonably techie church, I can call us that. But for a while, we've focused a lot on the physical church, you know, and even though we had an online presence, so the online church was kind of a bit of a sideshow, really. You know, the fact that, you know, we're broadcasting, there were some people online, we'd say hello to them every once in a while. They probably would wave back. But at the end of the day, you know, when you look, you know, what is it the Bible says? You know, where your heart is, your treasure will be. So when you looked at our strategy, our focus, our planning, a lot of that was around the physical church and how, you know, the experience of people could be and would be enhanced when they walk through our front doors, if you see what I mean. So we knew there were some people online. But what the lockdown did for us is that immediately we realized that the whole thing flipped over, you know, within a 6-day period, literally, you know, around the 15th or 22nd of March. And essentially where that left us, you know, as a church, was that we needed to change our focus and realize that the ability to reach out to this far larger, wider audience, you know, online was really the critical thing for church. And two big words that we're going to hear a lot, and you know, Pete has used them, Tando has used them as well, community and discipleship. And I think those are the critical things that we must maintain, because when we talk physical, digital, online, you know, on-site and all these words, you know, when we boil them down, they have to end up answering some key questions. And those are the questions of discipleship and the questions of community. So one other thing that, you know, Pete talked beautifully about, you know, the sort of groups that championed online church even before. And I know Anna will get back to some of Pete's points later, but I just want to mention this. You talked about the disabled and the long-term ill, for example, Pete. But also another group that was quite relevant for us was the group of travelers, people who are members of the church, but another round and they're away and they want to still connect with church. So that was also very key. But I want to bring in two quick points. One around quality and competition. And because we're on online as churches now, the truth of the matter is that we're competing for people's attention. And that's really, you know, what it boils down to. I like to kind of get back to the foundation. And when people turn on whatever they turn on, Tano talked about go to where they are, beautiful, which includes YouTube and Zoom and stuff like that. But when you get there, what's the next thing that's going to play before you and after you? What's that going to give as an impression of quality and competition when we compete for people's time? And that's what we represent as churches and as media teams and people who are responsible for that part of church. So I think, you know, realizing that people's time is what we are sort of competing for, you know, not competing in that sense, but, you know, that's what really what we're trying to sort of, you know, appeal to so that people have time for God. And, you know, talking about competition and quality, I just want to throw in three P's, because what people at the end of the day will see is the product, four P's actually, the product. And I think the product is a combination of the presenter, the presentation, and the presence. And that's what we can offer that the world cannot, you know, and because the Holy Spirit brings everything together. So very quickly, just to wrap up, you know, we'll talk about platforms and reducing the learning curve. You know, Tando talked about that already. You know, let people experience church where they already are. And, you know, we're always, always called to be salt and light, as we all know. And to be salt is to season, you know. We are in the world and we have to interact with the world and, you know, to season the world and to illuminate through light. And I think those are key concepts, you know, through which when we think about on-site, online, physical, digital, if these things, you know, one of the key things that must happen is interaction. So if any church wants to test whether or not, this is my final statement, if they want to test whether or not it's working, for me, one of those, you know, tests would be the idea of interaction. If we're communicating one way and it's only one way and there's no interaction from the other side, then something isn't quite right. As well, I want to leave one thought in our mind. When we say the term on site, which site? So my point is, on site doesn't necessarily mean church. And but linking that to my point of interaction, some people may not be in some of those groups that Pete talked about, long-term ill and disabled and so on. They may not be able to come. They may experience online at home, but we can take the on-site to them because the site doesn't have to be the church. And that's where the interaction comes in. So I'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Hi, thank you so much. I want to pick up where you've just left us, really, because many of the questions that are coming through are about this genuine community and engagement. And we talked, you've all touched on intentionality, that we have to be very intentional about what we're doing so that we don't just become entertainment, and just the ability to use technology for discipleship is fantastic. But how do we, when we're online, foster that real community, the real engagement, the stuff that the substance of church when we're not physically together? Can we just talk into that a little bit more?
Can I come first? I mean, I think first of all, so you go through examples like coffee shop in Coventry, where they've grown from 50 people to 500 people, okay, during the lockdown, by community, by engaging people in that kind of way. And I just kind of query the way that we criticize, or we kind of, I don't know, not criticize, we look online and say, is this really community? We need to look at on site and say, is that really community? Because often we can go into churches and nobody speaks to us. Yeah. Or kind of, you know, we just kind of go in, you know, the guy at the front does everything and we walk out again. Yeah. So community is something we've got to strive for, both in on-site churches and online churches. And it's the very core. It's what Jesus always did. Jesus did community, touched people. Yeah. He reached out to people, and formed communities around him. That's what we need to do as well.
I love that. Maybe we need to be learning from online church and bringing that back into the on-site church. That's fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, if I can just chip in there, Hannah, you know, yeah. Pete, very well said, Pete. And I think the key point for me is that community is not physical presence. Community is caring. And one of the key things is that people want to talk. People have things they're going through. And if we can listen, and just listen. Yeah, when we're online, we're not physically there. That's true. But we can always listen. And tools allow us to have, you know, if you go into Zoom, breakout rooms, this and that, and all sorts of things. Places where you can give people attention, listen to them, support them, and prayer is always key. So I think if we can incorporate these concepts, and as Pete said, I can walk through a church, go right out, you know, and haven't not spoken to one individual, or had a single touching experience, and that's not community. So because bigger churches have these challenges where we, you know, a lot is going on and people are doing stuff, people love people but they're just busy. But you know, we've got to dial it back and realize that people just want people to interact, and I think that's what we can do easily online.
Great, thank you, Tunde.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think just echoing the, I guess the question around, I don't think when we're talking about online, even the language sometimes, online versus on-site, the two things are not, we're not talking about things that are mutually exclusive. And I think even prior to the pandemic, you would know if you had a strong relationship with someone because it would actually go to online as well. So you wouldn't see them, but you would text them or you maybe FaceTime. And that was a sign that there was a strong level of relationship, but you'd also see them in person. So I think in terms of end goal, the way we've shaped this in terms of the new normal is we're talking about a hybrid model that continues almost seamlessly online and in person. So I think there's a level of probably like taking away those internal barriers and maybe even fears of what is this world that includes online going to be like, and realize actually a lot of this stuff, especially for emerging generations, it's like that's how it's always been. We've always been in WhatsApp groups and being able to talk to one another. We've always had an element of online in our conversations. So that's one of the things I would say. Of the light's gone in the room. I mean, give me 2 seconds. I need to move.
I love that. Go and turn the lights on. That is just brilliant. I'd love to bring us back a little bit to practicalities, because I think for some people, the whole world of digital can feel quite threatening. Tando, nice to see you again.
Come back.
The whole world of online can feel quite threatening, and you've got so many different options. You know, if you're not a millennial, I'm just not a millennial, then you might not understand what works well for what. How do you start to navigate that? How do you start to move into this hybrid model so it becomes something, you know, more tools in our tool belt rather than a, you know, just something that's completely daunting and a threat?
Well, I'd say you need to ask questions. Like the ideal version of church, we talk about churches and families, and even if we look in the, I think it's the book of Timothy, Paul goes through and talks about how we should relate to one another in different generations. This idea that we're meant to be able to have mothers and fathers within church, or you talk to peers as sisters. This idea that church is multi-generational, and I think that will help us then to navigate what works for different people who are in our communities. Where are people already, to go back to the point that we've spoken about before? I love what Pete shared about this community that are loving to have church on the phone. But then there's some other people who love like WhatsApp groups and being able to message. And maybe they watch a message, they watch a preach together, and then they're going to comment and speak about it. So I think there's, without that level of relationality in our churches and the willingness to ask questions, I think it's going to be difficult to reach the people who may be in a context that we're not personally used to. So I think that find out, ask questions, read the research would be my tips on that one.
A bit of learning.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, Daniel. I just want to build on that. That's just great foundation for me. So very quickly, I think it's also important. I kind of define it as every church has a DNA. And it's very important to understand what that DNA is, to define it and to leverage it. And what I mean by that is that what works for one church will be different from another. Never be, another key point is never assume. You know, if you're a church leader or you want to start a church, you might think this is how it should be. This is what I've seen. This is what, it really does depend on who is in the church. And, you know, there are university churches, you know, somewhere, you know, when I was a student in Coventry, you know, in Birmingham rather, you know, there were universities that were catered to students. There were churches that were catered to students. There were churches that were multi, you know, across age generations and so on. And so how we adopt and apply tech, I think is very relevant. It's very important to think about, you know, what the DNA of the church is. And I think as well as asking questions, as Daniel said, take risks. Take risks is also very important. You know, try things out, see what works. Don't be shy, don't be afraid to take the risk. Do it, see what works, because from that, even if it doesn't, you learn from what doesn't work. A phrase I learned recently, failure is data. So if you fail, it's just data. Capture the data, move on.
Very good, very good. Well, we've got 4 minutes left. We are so pressed for time because there's so much to talk about. This completely new topic for a lot of us. There's loads of fantastic questions. We haven't got to a lot of them. At this point, I just want to really encourage you, if you're watching and if you feel like your question hasn't been answered, to find other people who are asking similar questions or who are having a go in your local area and learn together. Maybe spend a morning just asking some of these questions and learning from each other. But Pete, I want to turn to you for our final question, or did you have something you want to say?
Can I just put together a couple of questions, one from Pitman over in Malaysia. Thank you, because he kind of raises the issue about the 22 to 40 year old age group that are anxious to go back in, but also conversations about young people and youth, which we're losing and having difficulties with. So just to say, we've got mixed science at the moment about these. I sound like Matt Hancock now saying, you know, listen to the science. We don't know what's happening. There's something about young people, not a group of young people, especially Gen Z, who don't want to be online, okay? Who want to say, let's come to on-site church because that's where we want to be. And they're very worried about being observed in worship, almost like quantum. You know, the if you observe something in quantum science, it changes what happens, almost though God's allergic to that, okay? So there's that. And that might be what Pitman's experiencing in Malaysia as well. But then there's the flip side of that, and saying that young people are increasingly moving spirituality concerns online. We thought that online church always fed offline church or on-site church. But what we're not finding, especially amongst younger people, is that they want to do everything online, and they get their spirituality through YouVersion, through, you know, whatever it might be, listening to God or Lecture 365 or whatever. And in a way, as a church, we might need to kind of flex what we're doing with church for young people, because some of them aren't going to want to come to on-site online worship. And so we need to provide something that's more on-site, you know, more proximal for them. But then the vast majority of young people who perhaps aren't churched already may well want to say, we want to do things online, and we've got to work out how as churches we're going to do that, because it's really expensive in terms of time and money to do both on-site and online in every church. And so perhaps we need to create, as somebody said earlier, centers of excellence, where we can do online centers of excellence and on-site centers of excellence elsewhere. I don't know.
That's great. I'm a very new church planter. And for me, one of the joys of church planting has been learning. And I think within the digital space, that's one of the great things at the moment. We can learn. And in that way, it's a really exciting time for us as a church to try and engage with new people in new ways that we haven't perhaps managed to reach before. Well, Pete and Io and Tando, thank you so much. It's been a really wonderful seminar. It's been great that you've all been able to join us as well. Coming up in a little while, we have got our next seminar, which is going to be looking at micro and house churches. And so do join us in a few minutes for that if you'd like to. Alternatively, you can switch on to a different seminar channel and learn from someone else. So Thanks for being with us, everyone, and we will catch you all at some point soon. Bye.